Welcome everybody to conference call number 146 with Revi, sponsored by National Council of Israel, Lezeif HaNishmas, Rabbi Yamin Haim, Lezeif HaTzadok Ubracha. Revi.
Thank you so much. We begin with question number one. What are the parameters of listening to music during Sefirah? Is there a difference between live and recorded? Is there a difference if A, someone is listening on headphones? B, not in the public manner. C, in order to exercise. D, for people who need noise and cannot work in silence. We understand that Sfira is a minig. The restrictions are a minig. Of course, the mitzvah to count is a din. All the things are minhagim. And the truth to be told, the minig is to be strict about music based on two primary sources. The Aruch HaShulchan, here in Siman Tov Tzadi Gimel, Siv Beis, we derive this from a Kal V'Chomer from Rikudim U'Mecholos. The original sources prohibit lively dancing during Sfira, and the Aruch HaShulchan maintains that certainly Kal V'Chomer music should be prohibited. One can quibble with this Kal V'Chomer and maintain that to the contrary, dancing is much more of a simcha than listening to music, in which case there is really no source for this Kal V'Chomer. In the alternative, Rav Moshe Feinstein, in a number of tshuvas, is of the opinion that fundamentally music should be prohibited all year long, which seems to be the view of the Shulchan Aruch. And even though the Ramah is more lenient, and that's our minhag all year long, but certainly, writes Rav Moshe, we should be strict during Sfira and the 3 weeks, etc. However, that's also debatable. Since our custom is to be lenient all year long, it's not clear why should we be more strict during Sfira. As a matter of fact, the Dvar Yehoshua, by Rav Ehrenberg from Eretz Yisrael, writes that he never heard of any prohibition of music to begin with. Why should music be usher? It's not found in any of the earlier sources. It is true that some say that lively music, which could lead to dancing, should be prohibited lest it lead to dancing. That's something which, of course, is itself questionable. Even dancing is only a minute. Why should we be so strict to prohibit music which may lead to dancing? Some kinds of music, which is very slow music, would not lead to dancing at all. Having said all this, I believe that, as the questioner implied, there was a question of a public manner of going against a custom which exists in many places. I do not believe that this is a minhag which is so universal as to demand absolute adherence to it in the spirit of Mokam Shenogu Lahachmir. Nonetheless, since there are many who feel that music is not allowed, I would not recommend that it be played loudly in public. In the privacy of one's homes, it's okay. And if one wants to hear music in the public sphere, they should utilize headphones. And of course, no one knows if the headphones, music with headphones is a shir in Gemara, and therefore that would be permissible. It's interesting that there is a strict view in Minchas Yitzchak, Chelek Aleph Siman Kufir Aleph, that's a minig tov, which can actually constitute an Isur de Oraisa. Even though Sfira itself is only a minig, this is a radical statement, and I believe that it is not accepted. As I mentioned before, the Psak is that it's only a minig, and according to the Dvar Yehoshua, even a real level where Simchas is prohibited Mikir Adin may listen to music. We don't really find an earlier source for this prohibition, and this is a matter of minig, and every place should be done properly. To do it is mutter, but not to offend a tzibur. Question number two. With Lag BaOmer Thursday night, is it permitted to shave Thursday night? A, because it is Erev Shabbos. B, can you shave Lag BaOmer night? In general, the Mishnah Berurah and Siman Tov Tzadi Gimel, Sivkot and Yudal quotes Mekilin. In particular, if it's Erev Shabbos, he's referring there to weddings, but on the simple level, the same thing should apply to shaving as well. It's interesting that the Mishnah Berurah says that one can shave, but not to get married. And Rav Moshe the Tshuva, Chelek Aleph Siman Kuf Nun Tes, the exact opposite, that to get married, that's a mitzvah. So it's okay the night before, as opposed to shaving, which to wait. So the next day, I recall distinctly, Rav Moshe's primary Talmud of Nissen Alper Zatzal made a wedding for one of his children the night of Lag BaOmer, of course, corresponding to his Rebbe's Tshuva to that effect. Question number three. A congruent mortgage is from a bank that is a publicly owned company without any apparently Jewish management. That bank sells the mortgage to a different lender. The new lender is also publicly owned, but the CEO's name indicates he could be Jewish. May the bar rely on the fact that the new lender is publicly owned corporation. This is a major dispute. Most posts can assume that the status of a bank from the perspective of Ribis depends upon the majority ownership. The majority is owned by non-Jews. There is not a prohibition of Ribis to receive or give. It's a little complicated as to why we should follow the majority, but that seems to be the prevailing custom. Again, Rav Moshe is involved for the third time. In his view, the individual who's managing it has an outsized role, and therefore it's possible, although not certain, that Rav Moshe might be machmir in this case, since the CEO has a Jewish name, even though the majority is non-Jewish ownership. So I believe that Meikar Adin should be okay. One who wishes to be strict will have a problem what to do with the mortgage. So I think the custom is to be lenient in this matter. Question four. Someone who is fasting for his father's yahrzeit, the yahrzeit is on a Friday. Is the person allowed to make an early Shabbos, or does he end to finish until Seisel Kochavim? Interesting question. The Mishnah Berurah, Sibin Reish Mem Tes Sivkot Nechav Beis, quoting the Ramah there in Siv Dalet, says it's better to say explicitly the first time that you fast for a yahrzeit that you're not going to complete the fast if it falls out on Friday. Most authorities say if the first yahrzeit comes out on a Tuesday, you're now contemplating Friday. So if the second yahrzeit comes out on Friday, at that point in time, say, I'm not going to finish the fast on Fridays going forward, that should suffice. That's the majority view, even though there are dissenters. Interesting, the Sefer Piskei Teshuvos in footnote 66 says, ideally, a person should not fast until Seisel Kochavim. Rather, should make early Shabbos, Daven Mar Plaga Mincha, and make Kiddush and eat while the sun is still shining. That's the ideal. It's the better of the two versions. We're not supposed to come at the Shabbos hungry. If there's no minyan early, this can certainly happen in most of the year, but there are early minyanim on Fridays. Then, if he's davening at the regular time, and Mincha just before Shkia, and Marav sometime thereafter, he should be careful as soon as Marav is over to make Kiddush and eat right away. This pshak is something which I keep. My father's yahrzeit, which is Chav Tes Sivan, usually comes out when I'm still here in the city. And since in our shul we have an early minyan for a plug. That's what I do. And I make kiddush and eat while the sun is still shining. When I'm in camp, which happens sometimes, we don't have an early minyan where we are in the kollel. And so I wait till the end of the fast, after Tzeis Kochavim, we daven Ma'ariv, and go and make kiddush as soon as I can thereafter. Both opinions are okay. It's only a matter of preference. Number five. Last time I recommended to light Yom Tov candles on the first night of Yom Tov before Shkia to Mekayim covered Yom Tov. It's an issue of Tamimus to light then for the first night of Shavuos, especially if the lady counted Sfira. As an aside, was the proper minute for a woman counting Sfira? The Mishnah Berurah seems to misquote the Shulchan Shlomo. Well, first things first. The Piskei Tshuvas in Siman Tov Sadi Dalet, footnote 26, quotes of Shlomo Zalman, that there's no problem for the woman to light candles early. Quotes from Rav Sternberg and Tshuvas van Hoggos seems to say it that way. However, there are those who disagree, primarily if the woman is going to make a Shechayanu. The Shechayanu is what somehow would impinge upon the Tzmimus. We spoke about it last time. It's better if a woman doesn't say Shechayanu at all. Nonetheless, even if she does say Shechayanu, there's room to be lenient. These days, women do count with a bracha. The Mishnah Berurah says that the women shouldn't make a bracha because they may miss one night. Of course, men daven marav every night, a better chance of remembering. Women, it's harder. But he left out three words. The ein and yodos adin, which presumably means they don't know that we pass in la halacha, that if you miss one night, should not be counted the subsequent nights with a bracha. That being the case, the opposite implication. But the only problem would be if a person skipped a night that they shouldn't be counting forward with a bracha, but not, as some would have it, that all 49 days are one, and if you miss one night, the previous 10 nights are all a bracha levatala. No, the opposite. This is a subject of a lengthy shir that my Rebbe of Soloveitchik gave and others gave, printed in a few places, that it's not that all 49 days is one mitzvah. Just that, tamimus means you can't skip in the count. You can't count 1, 2, 4. There has to be a 3. There are many riots to that principle, to that yisod. And therefore, if a woman counts 20 nights and she forgets night 21, she has not made 21 brachos levatola. Not at all. She just can't say 22 with a bracha because she missed the continuity. This is the psak lahalacha. Let us continue. Number 6. The rule in the yeshiva minyan is that everyone must keep their tefillin on until the end of the last kaddish. Sometimes the teenage boy will take his tefillin shalosh off early, and when he is caught, be told by the menal to put them back on for the last 2 or 3 minutes of davening. Does the boy have to say a brachas on his tefillin? What if he already took off both the shalosh and shalyat? Apparently, there is a strong possibility of someone being caught. He knows it can happen. And therefore, when he takes it off hoping not to be caught, he has in the back of his mind that he may be caught and forced to put him back on again. For this reason, there is no new bracha required. He always has in the back of his mind he may have to put them on again in case he is caught. Number 7. A fathering opinion of Ben for his son thought the Kohen would give him back the 5 slurim, even though the Kohen told him clearly beforehand they would not give it back. When in fact it was not returned, he was surprised. But he accepted what happened. The father is now coming to me years later and asking whether the opinion of Ben took effect, or that maybe he should do it again. Other Kohen has passed away with the bracha. I believe the opinion of Ben was effective. It took effect. If, for argument's sake, he takes the Kohen to a dentor and asks for the money back, he doesn't stand a chance. The Kohen said explicitly he's not going to give it back. And what he had in mind, the principle of Dvarim, Shibbolei, Vein, and Dvarim, he gave it over to the Kohen. It belongs to the Kohen 100%. Since it belongs to the Kohen 100%, it seems to be clear that the opinion of Ben took effect. Did he have the mitzvah? It seems to me that yes, because he made a bracha, opinion of Ben. Clearly he had in mind to fulfill the mitzvah no matter what. Even if you behold mitzvah shrichas kavana, I believe that it would still work. Even on the back of his mind, he wanted the money back, thought he'd get it back. Do not believe that undermines the effectiveness or even the mitzvah of pinyan aben. Number 8. Can one ask a goy to come to his house to A, turn on the air conditioner in the dining room? Some people are uncomfortable or very hot during the Suda. Or if some say it's unbearable in the house in general, not during the Suda. The air conditioner is already on. Can the goy just turn the settings to cooler? B, turn on the light in the study so you can learn there. Other rooms in his house are noisy. Can we say shvus to shvus b'malkom mitzvah? Absolutely yes. We do paskin that shvus to shvus is mutter b'malkom mitzvah when it's necessary. It's hard to measure how hot it has to be, but there is a mitzvah of onik Shabbos, and if the person cannot enjoy the onik Shabbos because it's too hot, I believe it's a shvus to shvus. This presumes, of course, that electricity is a derabbanan, which Shlomo Zalman held. According to Chazanish, any electric circuit is a Doraisa, which would change the situation completely. Most poskim accept Rabbi Shlomo Zalman and others, and therefore would be permissible as shvus to shvus when necessary. With respect to lights, all this firm states also because lights is a Doraisa. That's true in the good old days when we had incandescent bulbs, has a fire, a filament, which is a Doraisa. I believe that it's becoming illegal to produce such bulbs. And typically, these bulbs are not what we call LED. LED is only midirabbanan. It's only midirabbanan. Then it would be permissible, once again, to ask a goy to put on a midirabbanan light of LED for the purpose of the mitzvah of learning Torah. 9. A goyish waiter at a catered event on Shabbos is listening to his smartphone in the kitchen area, but it's very loud and audible in the simcha room where everyone has joy to have their suda. It is very bothersome to those who are near. May you directly ask him to lower it? Must you just describe the situation to him? The halacha is different if it will soon be kept quiet in the simcha room for a speaker and the loud noise will be very distracting. This question is very similar to the last question. We assume that turning off the smartphone is it the Rabbanan, and as such, you may ask him directly. Of course, it's always better, if possible, instead of asking directly, please do this or please do that, to state the need, and hopefully he'll figure it out by himself. For example, saying here, it's just so noisy, it's disturbing the people next room, right? When the previous case, it's just so hot in here, or it's just so dark in here. That's better, but not necessarily required if it doesn't work in that fashion for whatever reason. We go on. Question number 10. When going to a Simchan Shabbos away from home and being put up to sleep in one place while eating in another place, where is it preferable for the wife to light candles? They're making early Shabbos. When does the wife get her Noah from the candles? If you are sleeping at home, eating out for the Simcha, they're making early Shabbos, and the place they are davening and eating is 15-minute drive away. What options does the wife have to fulfill her candle lighting? Well, let me take one clear statement. We paskin la'alocha, even though there's a minority view, anytime you light before plaga mincha, it is invalid. Too early. And therefore, it's quoted in Poskim to blow it out and light again with a bracha after Plag HaMincha. That's the consensus and majority view. So that's number one. But let's take in A, there's no reference in the first part to early Shabbos. But even if, let's take away early Shabbos. If they go into a Simcha, the likelihood is, by the time they come back from the Simcha, Simchas take very long, hours usually, speeches and singing, then the Neres will have gone out. Even if not, very little Hanah is had from the Neros. You know, the post can suggest that our Neros in general is a problem. And Rav Shech the Shlita will not allow for a bracha to be made on a candle which is lit in a room filled with light. You have to include the light in your hadlaka, which means flipping it off and flipping it on again. That way you fulfill the mitzvah with the light. And I believe, once again, that any light works, even LED, because all we care about is light, not like Ner Chanukah. In any event, so what should happen? So the woman should flip the lights off and flip the lights on again. In this way, she's fulfilling the mitzvah in her house, and she will have an hour when she comes home and she read by it or do something of that nature. However, since most women prefer to light actual candles every single Shabbos, even though in my opinion you can be yotze with electric lights, she should therefore light the candles at the place where she is eating. And there are those in general who prefer the makom achila to the makom shena, even though I'm not convinced that it's true. With respect to Ner Chanukah, it's the reverse. Some say Shabbos is different because it's connected to the meal. I'm not convinced of that, since it really has to be in your home. And in most situations where you're sleeping in a private room, it's more of your home as opposed to a more public place where you're eating. Nonetheless, seems to be no choice. She can light at the place where she's eating. And she should have in mind that the previous lighting, if you will, of the electric candles, electric light, where she is sleeping, is part of the mitzvah. Every Shabbos when I walk out the door, I flip the lights off and on. The Rebbe, she remembers, does it again herself later on. It's better she should do it. But in case she doesn't do it, I do it. As long as you have to plug a mincha, that's the fulfillment of the mitzvah. That's the light over the dining room table. And this way, the mitzvah can be fulfilled. Now, if she leaves the house before Plag HaMincha, then you're really in trouble. No way to light before you leave the house. Impossible. So, you're stuck. You have no choice but to fulfill the mitzvah where you are eating. As long as they let you light candles there, it's important to note that the candles should be on your table and not too far away. Certainly not in a separate room, which some hotels provide you. We call that the Towering Inferno, which is the Bracha Levatolo, because it just produces heat and no one can even walk in through. That's how hot it is. That's for sure no good. If it's after Plag HaMincha, she should do the same. Light Neros Shabbos with a electric light. Make a Tanai. They are not in the Kabbalah Shabbos yet. Drive to the place where you eat, where the shul is, where the simcha is, and then you can once again light a regular candle with the intention of including the electric lights which you lit earlier. But again, it's only going to work if the woman was at home at the time of Plag HaMincha, and that's what I do whenever the situation arises. For example, back in camp, my wife will flip the lights off and on in the bunk, and then she goes to the dining room to light candles with a bracha, and the bracha refers back to the electric lights in their bunk as well. Number 11. A long time ago, I wrote a long letter home online paper from Israel to my family detailing my year in Israel. My mother just found them, still in the original envelopes. Is it permissible to read these letters on Shabbos? Is there an opinion of Sharei of Shtare Adyotas? Yes, sure, there is an Indian. Nonetheless, you can perhaps eke out a possibility based on Piske Chuvis, Simon Shin Zion, footnote 159, where he says for purposes of a mitzvah, one may do it. His example is reading a report card where the child had good marks to give the child chizuk to continue to learn well. Seems to me that over here, there may be chizuk and idud, encouragement, from the letters written home so many years before, which indicated a rarefied spiritual experience in the Holy Land. That's what happens when these letters are sent. When I was there, I sent aerograms, usually once or twice a week, and they were, I'm sure, filled with ha'aras, maybe some divrei Torah, or something nice happened in the yeshiva. Maybe a mitzvah to nostalgically reread those letters, and if it's considered to be a mitzvah of chizuk and idud in a spiritual fashion, it's okay. Otherwise, it's better not to. Number 12. Is it permissible to use a non-electric carpet sweeper on Shabbos? What about a handheld crumb sweeper table brush, which also works with rollers on Shabbos? The Piske Chuvis, again here in Simon Shinbei's footnote 62, is vehemently against it, according to Minchas Yitzchak and others. It's an uvda d'chol, it's a weekday activity, and it can remove some of the dust from within the carpet, which might be an Easter of Malabe, and may pull out some of the hairs, if you will, threads from the carpet, which could be an Easter of Tolesh. So therefore, for all those reasons, he said you shouldn't do it, and in fact, you shouldn't do it. Presumably, most of those reasons apply even to the handheld chroma sweeper table brush, although it's less of an of the dachol, and there aren't any loose hairs in the tablecloth, and you're not going to pull anything out. So it's more lenient. Therefore, those who want to be lenient, in that case, can be. But it seems to me it's better to be strict just in case. Number 13. A balabas showed me in one of the Shabbos weeklies that a certain gadol was of the opinion if the Chazan mistakenly started to say Kaddish after Chazaras HaShatz instead of Tachlin, he should not be stopped, but should rather continue and Tachlin should be omitted. Do we pass it like this? Does it depend when the Chazan is caught? What should be done if the Chazan already finished the entire Kaddish? This is discussed in the Dirshu, in Simen Kuf Lamed Aleph, footnote 6, where he says that this great gadol, certain gadol, not one gadol, was both the Chazon Ish and Reb Chaim Kanievsky's nephew. Both say that. However, it seems to me that the position of Reb Shlomo Zalman, which is also quoted in that same footnote from the Halicha Shlomo, is that you should complete the Kaddish and say Tachlin thereafter. There's an additional dispute. Do you say a second Kaddish afterwards? That's in Piske Chuvis, footnote 15. He thinks maybe you should. I believe you should follow the linear position and not say an additional Kaddish after you said the Tachanun. 14. What is the proper halacha regarding folding a talis on Shabbos? It seems to be a machlokas between the Mishnah Berurah and Aruch HaShulchan. Is there an explanation for the chiluk between white and color? B, in general, is there a rule of how to pass the machlokas between Mishmur and Aruch HaShulchan? All excellent questions. So the difference between light and color is found in Shulchan Aruch, Simon Shin Bei, Sif Gimel. Mishnah Berurah, Sif Kon, Tezayin explains that in colored garments, the folding is a greater tikkun. There are some who maintain that folding something is an Easter of tikkun mana. You're fixing up an item, the name of the garment. The Shulchan Aruch there only allows it if you're going to wear it the same day. And because of Yesh Omer, there are some who say that Shalo B'Seder Kipulo Harishon, it's not folded the same exact way as before. It's always Mutter. And the Mishnah Berurah seems to apply that. So the Rama likes that shita. And Sifkot and Yudches, he says, even if you have no intention of wearing it for the rest of the day. The Sharatian quotes this from the Eldi Rabba to Ferris Yisrael and other poskim. Only the Chayodim is strict. Why is he strict? So he presumes that the Chayodim is worried about the first opinion in Shulchan Aruch, which is prohibitive in all cases, but fundamentally we rely on the second opinion that Rama himself says. I saw in the Piskei Tshuvos, footnote 100, quotes the Aruch HaShulchan, Sifyut Beis, who says, no, it's permissible even according to the Fiseda Kipulo. But many people do it in that fashion. On the other hand, the next footnote he quotes those who say it's prohibited, even Shalom Fiseda Kipulo. So it seems to me, Lechatchila, we should follow the strictest view. That's what I do. I don't fold the talus at all. And if I'm going to fold the Shalom Kedera Kipulo, you don't gain too much. I want to refold it again if the Shabbos is over. So, therefore, I don't see the great reason to rely upon the stricter opinion. The Shulchan Aruch in Simen Tov Kuf Tes Sifhei seems to say Tikkun Mona. However, it seems to me that, strictly speaking, if you aren't so careful to fold it exactly on the crease, there's room to be Megillah, as the Mishnah Berurah writes in Tifkot and Yudalit, and the better way to do it is not to do it so precisely on the original fold. Is there a klal? Or Chashukah, Mishnah Berurah? No, there's no klal. Or Chashukah is much more quick to rely upon a minig, as he did over here. In this case that we're discussing, that people are doing it, so it must be mutter. And the Mishnah Berurah will say, well, they're doing it, but it's also anyway. In any event, what should a person do if he doesn't know what to do? Do what we say. Puk chazim me'abed debar. See what people are doing. Obviously, if you can't figure that one out, you have to speak to a Rav. Yeah, a person should say l'charav. The Rav should tell you what to do. Only if a person is capable to pass it on his own. Otherwise, he has to have a Rav to tell him what to do in these cases. Final question, number 15. We're opening a new mikvah in our community. How long after Shkia should be the earliest time for Tevila? Is Friday night any different to allow for an earlier time for the women can be Tovel while men are in Shul? What policy should we have regarding checking for Chatzitzas? Should Chatzitzas checking by an attendant be required or only offered by the mikvah attendant? What should be our policy regarding nail polish? Does the mikvah attendant have to be someone who generally covers her hair, dresses in a snur manner, and is fully shomer Torah mitzvahs? Can we have a trained woman do the daily checking of the water level of the mikvah? Are there any other hakpodas, specific halachas, and etzes tovas we should implement when we run in the mikvah? This is an open-ended question which can go on forever, but I'll try to be brief. We'll focus on primarily the first question. Go back to Riverdale. An hour mikvah, the time for tefillah during the week, is 40 minutes after the shkia. This is Tesa Kachavim, even in the summertime, according to the Shita Sagra, even extrapolating for the summertime and the fact that our latitude is higher than that of Eretz Yisrael, and even going with Rav Tkachinsky's addition to what the Vilna Gaon said, which may be the Shita of the Gaonim potentially. Doesn't matter, whatever it is, 40 minutes should suffice. And that's the low plug. We have 40 minutes on the schedule every single night during the year. 40 minutes, that's enough. Friday night, we have 20 minutes. Now, the last 20 minutes, that's too early. Not necessarily. The Vilna Gaon said that Seis Kochavim is 14 minutes after the Shkia. And as a matter of fact, and Rav Banish in the Sefer Zman HaBalacha had a soldier friend of his who was in the Negev with no artificial light, who saw three stars, in fact, 14 minutes after the Shkia. That's Shita Sagra. And therefore, since we wait 20 minutes, it's considerably after Tzitz Kochavim. Until a person goes down, always takes an extra minute or more. And therefore, there's room to be lenient. And the primary reason is Mishum Sneers. Women should be able to get home before the men come back from shul. And They should walk the streets. Women are all in shul at that point in time. You wait 40 minutes, you're already out of shul. In addition, if you look in Rabbi Avadya's Taras Habayis, Kelik Beis, page Tufsam HaGimel to Zion, quotes the Korban of Sanel, who says that a person may be tovel in a warm mikveh. It's said that the Alter Rebbe said he's going to get Gan Eden for giving this shak, because most poskim before him prohibited it. It's called the Gezeres HaBalonim. We're not permitted to go into hot water on Shabbos or Yontif. We assume it's mutter because it's not really bathing. It's just you're in there for 1 minute. A number of other leniencies which others reject. The Chachan Tzvi, for these reasons, and Simeon Aleph writes that a woman should be dafka go into the mikveh in bein hashmoshes. The gozu bein hashmoshes. Frek the korban asanel, the tarte disasri. You're telling her to go to the mikveh, which is only permitted at night. Then you're turning around and saying, well, maybe it's day. That's an internal contradiction. So the way out of that is to be with Saref, the Shita of Rabbeinu Tam, who said that the Iker is to come home after Tzeis HaGochav. And even if we don't pass in that way, even especially on the seventh night, which we're discussing, still, since that Shita exists, it's not a literal Tarta Disastri. And so it's implied in the Sefer Sidrei Tara, Simkuf Tzadi Zayin, Sivkotin Tes. In general, Pisket Shuva, end of Simkuf Tzadi Zayin, is Mekel Ben Hashmashas B'diyeve. Rabbi Vadi quotes an opinion which says, no, Lechatchila should always go Ben Hashmashas all week long. Sfeka Derabonon, Lekula, we don't paskin that way. In our case, you have a situation of 20 minutes. We'll call it Safek Ben Hashmashas, Safek Laila. So according to the Chacham Tzvi said, Shibadavka, do it Ben Hashmashas. It's even better, halachically, 20 minutes as opposed to 40. Not merely because of matters of Tzniyus. And our custom, like the Aruch HaShulchan and Sif Yizayim, is to be makled in hot water of a mikvah on Shabbos no matter when you go, even an hour after Shkia, not a problem. And therefore, I believe that a mikvah, even if it opens 20 minutes after Shkia on Shabbos, as ours does, should be considerate of women who want to wait the same 40 minutes as during the week, so they should be able to be tovel then, which has the extra stringency of being later, if the Tzeis HaGochav, according to the Gra, all opinions, we're not going to allow the mikvah later wait to fulfill the stricter points of view, 72 or 16.1 or 90 or 19.8, which are much stricter views. Generally speaking, we're not machah for these views with respect to tefillah, where it's only a chumrah bialma to wait until it gets dark. That's the main thing I wanted to talk about, establishing a mikvah. I have to tell you a story which we said before, but I have to say it again because of its importance. In some communities, there's been a wholesale elimination of waiting until Friday night, Shkia or Tzeis HaGochav or Ben HaShemashes. They allow women to go routinely by day because it's inconvenient or sometimes even impossible than to be going to the mikveh by night. Although there is some justification for this, I believe it's very incorrect. And when I'm told, why don't you do it, some other mikveh is doing it, I say, we do not believe in the lowest common denominator of halacha. In my view, it's not allowed, and we just don't allow it. It's important to note this, because a rabbi can be pressured to do this, because mikveh X does it. Doesn't mean you have to do mikveh X. Rabbi Forst, in his beautiful Sefer on this matter, quotes from Moshe Feinstein, has a leniency in this regard, permitting it, and he even permits it in some cases where the woman, when she returns home from the mikveh, her husband is still there. That's very hard to to defend that position. But I have to tell you three stories, which some of you may have heard before. In the first month that our mikveh was dedicated, in June of 1982, on the same Friday, I received two phone calls. The first, hello, yes, I would like to use the mikveh. I said, great, but I want to use it by day. I said, no. But my father said, I'm allowed to do it by day. I said, go to your father's mikveh. But I'm a doctor. I said, so what? Turned out she wasn't a doctor. Her husband was a doctor. And they lived in Einstein campus, and there was an old mikveh far away, which was not so safe and not so nice. And they wanted to take advantage of the opportunity to a beautiful new mikveh in Riverdale. But I said, no. The same day, in June of 82, I get a second call. Hello? Ken. Harav? Ken. Biti tzricha litbo. Tov? Shetitbo. Aval itzricha litbo bayom. Lo. Aval ba'aretz tov lot bayom. I respond. Shetitbo ba'aretz. End of the day, it wasn't his daughter, it was his wife. And although they were staying far away, he himself was a guest speaker in the shul, which is literally next door to the mikveh. And the local representative took it down at night. I learned from there that people sometimes don't always tell the truth, because it is inconvenient to go Friday night, and they tell you stories which are sometimes not correct. These are both anonymous phone calls. Final story number three is I received a call from a woman who I did know she was living in Yonkers, a mile and a half from the mikveh, and she called me in Hoshana Rabbah. I believe the year was 1984, and tells me, I hurt my ankle, it really hurts, but I'm supposed to go to the mikveh tonight, Wednesday night, and normally on Shabbos I go and I walk back. And if you tell me you have to walk back, I'll walk back. Here, we had a psak, which even the Bali HaShulchan, not usually Yomeko, considers this as a possibility, which is that when there are three nights in a row that a woman cannot go to the mikveh, here we had Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, then even on the seventh day, she would be allowed to go to the mikveh later in the day, as long as before she gets home, for Lich mentioned, her husband should already be in shul. Okay, but we had a rule we established 2 years before. No one rabbi can allow such a thing to avoid pressure on the rabbi. He called a second rabbi. Called the second rabbi, told him the case, said, yeah, you're right, let her go. I met this woman 3 months later. She said, Rabbi, you saved my life. I said, what? It still hurt on Motzei Shabbos. I went to the emergency room. They said I had a fractured ankle. So I asked the doctor, what would happen if I'd walked a mile and a half on that ankle? Oh, you'd have to have surgeries and pins for the rest of your life. It would have been a disaster. So there are exceptions. We made that exception on two more occasions for women in the last 40 plus years who were traveling somewhere where there was no mikveh. But please don't be intimidated by someone telling you that they do it there. Once a guy said to me, but it's minhag Sfaradim to allow it. You know, they play the Sephardi card. I looked at Rabbi Avadia Yosef, he says, no. Maybe you can go Ben HaShemashis, okay, but not long before and then drive back home. So again, there are other rabbis who disagree. We love all rabbis, but in my view, that should not be done. This is all part of this man of the mikveh, especially Friday night is the most sensitive time. Next, chatzitzis. In my view, chatzitzis, the default, should require an attendant to check. In some of the mikvahs, the default is she will only check if someone asks for it to be checked. I believe it's important for the default to be checked. If someone says, I'm offended, I don't want you to check me, then you have to listen to her. Because remember, the real reason for the woman, the balanit, the attendant, is to make sure that the hair is 100% under the water. That's the most important thing. One hair is up, the whole mikveh is no good. That's so critical. It's so critical. Speaking of policies, some of the women said, I want to go myself with no one in there. I said, no. But the same answer. I say the same answer. In Israel, the government pays for the mikvahs, and some of the people who want to have this policy force the government to force the mikvahs to allow it to happen. We don't have no government. We will not allow it to happen. You have to have a woman in there. You're afraid she should look at you. Okay. So she can go in back, you know, with her back to you in a real pinch. We'll allow her to go in a very loose robe that we do for a Gioris. But to go into the water with no one there, it's against our policy. We just don't let it in. Finished. Now, what about whose the woman should be? Oh, before that, nail polish. Nail polish, the chatchila should be taken off, as the Ramos evidence should be taken off. I do concede that there may be some who hold that nail polish is similar to hair dye, which many poskim are making, even the chatchila. But not everyone agrees, because the nail dye, there are two reasons. One, the lanoi, which would apply to nail polish. But two, is the no mamashes. Nail polish certainly has mamashes. So ideally, it should be removed. But if a woman has nail polish, we will allow her to go into the mikvah, just as we allow a woman to go in with long nails. The Shulchan Aruch says she should cut her nails at the skin line. We're very, very, very careful. Very careful not to send a woman home because of a chatzitza. We're afraid, chalila, she can be nichshol. So we will tell her, if it meets our standards, we'll tell the woman says kosher. If it doesn't meet our standards, we'll tell the woman, listen, this is a problem. Consult your rabbi. And maybe the rabbi said it's okay. So we will let her go, notwithstanding the chatzitza, because the midaraisa is a good tefillah anyway. The woman will not yell out kosher, for those who know what that means. And, all right, so we have to hope that there is a tzad kula, notwithstanding the chatzitza. We're very hesitant to send someone out of the mikvah. The only one who's to be sent out of the mikvah is a woman who's not married. Our policy cannot come in. But she'll tell you, all right, you want to let me in? You're going to make me do an Issa Kores, because she'll be a neither when she's living with her boyfriend. The answer to that is found in the Sefer Akedas Yitzchak in Parshas Vayera. It talks about Sodom, where he talks about institutionalized sin. It was a case where there were men who were committing adultery, Rachman al-Itzlan, so the community was providing them single women. Maybe they even went to the mikvah. And Akedas screaming and yelling, that's a Chadas HaTzibur. A person sins privately, that's his problem. But to make it institutional would be a much worse problem like they had in Sodom. So if you're not married, you cannot go into my mikvah. Aye, but they lose this other mikvah, they let you in. So go to the other ways. We cannot be driven by other mikvahs. I'm not here to criticize them. They have their other cheshbonos, their other rabbonim. That's the story. The mikvah tenant has to be someone who's fully shomer Torah mitzvahs, has to cover her hair, has to dress in a similar manner. Otherwise, it's so bad for the mikvah image. I'm talking about communities such as Riverdale. And if you're out of town somewhere where no one covers their hair, no one, where they always dress in a certain way, which we wouldn't accept in our community, okay, that's a different situation. You need a trained woman to daily check of the water level of the mikvah. Listen, the water level of the mikvah is a big halachic issue. According to most authorities, as long as the water level was high enough when it was filled, if it went down, it's kosher. We are strict to have it higher than that. Either fill up the entire hole, which connects the Beis HaTfilah to the boros, or at least two-thirds of the way up. But if it goes a little bit less, it's mutar mikaradin. Obviously, the mikvah attendant should be told this halacha and try to maintain it at a high level. You have to be careful about filters. The filter has to be turned off before a woman goes into the mikvah. And, of course, before Shabbos, make sure it's turned off before Shabbos. If a woman went in when the filter was going, that's a long discussion. Rav Moshe seems to say in one place that b'diavad, post facto, it is a good tefillah. Although if I found out, I would call the woman back if I could find her to go in again when the mikvah filter is off. Any other akpadas, halachas, and eitzes tovas when running a mikvah? Wow. Yeah. What do you do about Geirus, another big tumul? So in the books, right, don't let any non-Orthodox Geirim in. From the time we established our mikveh, from the very get-go, I had a different policy to let everybody in. And not because, as these rabbis write, the conservatives are giving money, they want their share. They gave us no money. Let them in anyway. They reformed. Anyone wants to come in. And my reason is as follows. If I draw a line where it says someone who called himself Orthodox can do a Geirus, and otherwise not, I'm in effect giving my imprimatur to all the Orthodox Geirus that it's good, which in my opinion is not correct. So therefore, anyone can come in, use the facility, give a few dollars to the mikvahs, to everyone does, and I'm not giving my haskama to any Geirus which takes place in our mikveh. Another Eitzah Tovah which we have aside from giving the tutors Geirus to each Geirus and Geirus, we have a book, big book, we're up to our fourth or fifth book by now, big books which are kept very safely in the mikveh, which record every single Geirus who signed on it. Three rabbis have to sign on it. It doesn't matter who they are. They could be conservative, reform, male, female, doesn't matter. It should be a record of who did it. So if years later someone wants to know, especially it happens when someone loses the Geirus papers. This happened in our situation. We thankfully were able to find the rabbis who signed that day that they did the Geirus, and that was on that basis the woman was able to get married. These are very important Eitzah Tovos. I can talk to you forever about these things, but I think our time is up. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you very much, Levi. We'll be on again in 2 weeks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.